Hey guys, it's Allie. Welcome back to In for Life, the podcast. This is episode 367 called Barbara Ginty. This episode is brought to you by Fertyl. Fertyl was created by Dr. Jen, a PhD biologist who lived infertility herself. After hitting roadblocks and being handed a loan application instead of answers, she built what she wished existed, the only sterile, FDA-cleared, at-home insemination kit. Fertyl places sperm right at the cervical opening, 1 inch lower than an IUI, with no meds, no prescriptions, and no appointments. The kit includes 3 sterile attempts to time with your cycle. It's as easy to use as a tampon, US made, IVF grade, and HSA, FSA eligible, and it ships discreetly. If you're exhausted, budget stretched, or just want to try something that feels private and empowering, this could be your why not moment. For LGBTQIA plus families, solo parents by choice, or anybody navigating unexplained infertility. So here's what to do. Go to Fertyl.com today. That's Fertyl.com and use code INFERTILAF for $10 off. That's Fertyl, pronounced Fertyl, but spelled with a PhD out of spite. They told Dr. Jen she wouldn't be a mother and she used her PhD to prove them wrong. Again, that's Fertyl.com with code INFERTILAF. Thanks, Fertyl. This episode is brought to you by Belly. Are you thinking about growing your family? Whether you're just starting to plan or are actively trying to conceive, preconception health is key. That's where Belly comes in. Belly has vitamins to help both women and men optimize their health before pregnancy. With essential nutrients like folate, iodine, and zinc, Belly ensures your body is ready for this exciting next step. Belly goes beyond basic vitamins. Their unique formula supports reproductive health, hormone balance, and fertility, all while being made with the highest quality ingredients. Plus, Belly is created with only clean ingredients so that you can rest assured that you are making a safe choice for you and your future little one. When it comes to starting your family, take the first step with Belly. Give yourself and your future baby the best foundation for a healthy start. Visit bellybaby.com today and use code IAF15 for 15% off your first order. That's bellybaby.com, BELIBABY, for a healthier tomorrow. Belly Baby, because healthy beginnings start here. Thanks, Belly. All right, my friends, I have some very exciting news to share. Book number 4 of the Work of Art series is officially in the works, and it's featuring someone very special in the fertility community. And I cannot wait to tell you more, because you are going to love this one. If you're new to Work of Art, this is my children's book series designed to help families explain IVF, donor conception, surrogacy, embryo adoption, single parents by choice, same-sex couples, and ART in ways that feel honest, empowering, and age-appropriate, because our kids deserve to know their stories and they deserve to feel proud of how they came to be. And right now, you can get all 3 existing books in the Work of Art series as a bundle for just $49. That's $30 off the original price. These books are trusted by thousands of families, fertility doctors and clinics, and mental health professionals, and they've helped so many parents start conversations that can feel really hard but are so important. You can grab the 3-book bundle now at infertilafgroup.com, and stay tuned because book 4 is coming soon. Okay, today's episode is a very special crossover with someone I've been wanting to have on the show for a while. It's Barbara Ginty, host of the Future Rich podcast. Barbara is a financial planner who's built an incredible platform helping people feel more confident and empowered about their money. And today, we're talking about something even more personal. Barbara shares her full fertility journey from freezing her eggs in her 30s to coming back to those frozen eggs 7 years later to go through IVF. And now, as this episode airs, she's on the brink of welcoming her first baby. She also turns the mic on me a little bit, and I share more about my own experience with secondary infertility and IVF, including the really complicated feelings that can come with wanting to grow your family when you already have a child. And because Barbara is Barbara, we also dig into the money side of all of this, the real cost of fertility treatment, how people can prepare financially, and how dramatically the fertility landscape has changed over the past 40 years. Without further ado, this is Barbara's infertility story. Barbara
Deborah, it is so great to meet you. I can't wait to hear all about your fertility journey. And we're also, since this is a crossover episode, we're going to talk about things that you normally talk about on your show too. You know, obviously the financials, fertility and money. We're going to talk about men and fertility. I know you've talked about your journey a bit before on your show. And I'll probably be, you know, telling some things to my listeners when we do the second part and you kind of interview me that they might have heard before, but it's kind of cool to bring it together and go through both of them and how, you know, we can talk about certain themes and things we've noticed being in this fertility landscape and the podcasting landscape for so long. Because your show started, you said, how many years ago?
8 years ago. So we're going into our ninth season.
Yeah.
But a lot has changed both arenas. Both in podcasting and in fertility.
Totally. So yeah, let's get all that later. But let's start with what I always like to ask my guests, which is, have you always wanted to be a mom?
So transparently, I always wanted to. When I got to 30, I had really wanted to, and everybody else was getting married and having families, and that just wasn't my story. And so I think probably from like a self-preservation standpoint, I was like, okay, maybe this is obviously not the path. I always thought I would work on my career in my 20s and then get married and have a family in my 30s. And when that wasn't happening, I was like, okay, so I think I need to reevaluate what I want. I still want to have a family, but I obviously can't make that the forefront right now because it's not working. From a dating standpoint, that was putting a lot of pressure on dating. So I took it down a notch. I had always thought that I would have a family. And then when it wasn't materializing, it was a bit devastating. You know, on your 30th birthday, you think you're going to have all these things together.
Exactly.
And I turned 30 and I was like, wow, nothing I ever thought I'd have at 30. I have nothing. On my 30th birthday, every one of my best friends was like 9 months pregnant.
Oh my God.
Like, they're like, what do you want to do? And I was like, I want to go and do stand-up paddleboarding. And they were like, nobody can do that. Like, right. You're the only person in the group who could actually do that. So I definitely had always wanted a family. What I will say is that I think I put it more on the back burner when I hit 30, just because I was always the bridesmaid, never the bride. I was constantly dating. Nothing was working out and everybody was having children. Mm-hmm. And so when I hit 30, I feel like I was like, okay, so I maybe need to put this. I hope it happens for me, but I'm not going to make it such a priority because it's disheartening when you want something and you can't have it.
Right. So follow up to that is, what did you know about fertility growing up? Like, you know, this is a common theme on my show because a lot of people were just taught like, don't get pregnant. It's so easy to get pregnant. You can kind of have a baby at any time, thanks to science and IVF and all the things. And now we know there's a lot more nuance to it. And, you know, it's not as easy as we once thought. So tell me, what was your sex education like?
I went to Catholic school and Catholic college. So I actually just thought you could just easily fall pregnant. Like, you could literally fall down on the sidewalk. You could also fall pregnant.
Right.
That was really my naive understanding.
Right.
So I had no idea that it could be hard. Okay. I just thought that it was easy. I knew it would be easier from a biological standpoint to get pregnant younger than it would be to get older. But that hadn't really crossed my mind until I hit my mid-30s. That at 30, you know, 35 seems far away. And then when I was rapidly approaching 35, I was like, oh, this is concerning because now I'm realizing that I'm getting older and I'm still single, right? And so this could be a bit problematic. But I think it is interesting. I did grow up and just really thought it was easy to get pregnant. That's like always, that was like my big fear was like, you can't get pregnant.
Right. Exactly. That's.
And then all of a sudden you're like, okay, I want to get married and have a baby. And it was like, nobody wants to do that now. Like, I've been avoiding trying to get pregnant my whole life. And now that I want to get married and have a family, it feels like the impossible mission.
Completely. So I know you had a conversation with your primary care physician at one point, and she was going through an infertility struggle. Where does that fall into the timeline here? And was that the point where you started to consider freezing your eggs?
I think I got really lucky. I was working in finance at the time. So a lot of my friends and colleagues were in finance. My primary care was just a really special woman and was very open and honest. And so she brought up fertility in one of my annual visits because she was going through it and was spending like near $100,000 on fertility treatments. Because she said, you know, I waited too long. I just, you know, with being a doctor, I just said next year. And then all of a sudden, you know, the years go by very quickly. Mm-hmm. I really feel like 35 to 40 went very quickly. And if you're interested in having a family, then you should consider egg freezing. At the same time, those conversations were also happening within my social group, which I thought was super helpful, right? To be surrounded by that conversation, because it's not the case for everybody. So I had the conversation with my primary care. And then ironically, I went to a networking group that was focused for females in finance. And we had a CFO, a very high profile CFO, fly in to speak with us. And she said, if you want to really focus on your careers, that's great, but you should also freeze your eggs. And I was like, it was not a public event. This is like, would not record it. She was very clear that this is a private event. And she was super transparent about why she thought that was so important. And I feel like hearing it from my primary care was one thing, but then to hear from such a high profile CFO who like flew across the country to meet with us to say, if you're really serious about your career, this is something you should seriously consider. Even if it's not covered with insurance, this is a real big investment into your future and what you want. If you want to have the career and you want the family, you need to spend the money and do this.
Mm-hmm.
Was really eye-opening. And I ended up doing it like 30 or 60 days later.
Okay. So tell me about going into deciding you're going to freeze your eggs and the kind of logistics of it behind there. How did you figure out where to go, what to do? What kind of research did you do? Did you have friends who'd done it, et cetera?
So I think that's really what was like, I got very lucky in that it was a conversation. So a lot of these women I were at this networking group I was friends with. And so I asked my primary care, where would she recommend? I was in New York City at the time. So she gave, you know, obviously there's top clinics in New York City. And then where my friends were going to also look. I ironically was in a transition between New York City and Salt Lake City. And so I looked out here in Salt Lake City too. I was a little on the fence because it wasn't as common out here to freeze your eggs. That was more of what I would say like a bi-coastal thing at the time, where it was like very much more prevalent in New York City, probably in San Francisco and LA. But in Utah, you looked at their website and it wasn't on there. Like it was a fertility clinic, but it wasn't like, here's the egg freezing situation.
Okay.
It was like,
what year was this?
2019 is when I did it.
Okay. So yeah, that's...
So I ended up... Yeah, it was early. So out here in Salt Lake City, I decided to take the chance to do it out here because I was thinking about buying a house here. So it kind of made sense logistically if I was going to give up my apartment in New York and be here.
Mm-hmm.
So I went with a clinic out here, a fertility clinic, not an egg freezing clinic because, you know, there's some that specialize now in just egg freezing.
Right.
And I definitely felt like the outlier. I don't know if I was, but I'd go in and be like, we're going to get you a baby. And I'm like, I don't want a baby. And they'd be like, oh... I was like, I'm just here to preserve my fertility for optionality in the future. And they were like, oh, okay.
Wow.
Okay. I was like, just because I think that I was a little bit of an outlier of going in just to freeze my eggs and like being unmarried and not in a relationship.
Right.
So,
but good for you that you advocated for yourself and did that, you know?
I think it was the best thing. It was, you know, my girlfriends that worked in finance, we did it, who were still single and approaching 35. So I did it right before I turned 35.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a little odd going in. And then, you know, when you go in for all the appointments, they'd be like, we're going to get you a baby, which is nice. They were being nice. But I was like, yeah, but that's not what I'm like. I'm not here today to try to get a baby. I'm trying to give myself the optionality for a baby in the future.
Right.
So I'm glad that I stuck with it.
Yes. So tell me more about the meds, and I believe I'd read that you ended up with OHSS, right? Can you tell us a little bit about those things too?
Yeah, so it was a little shocking at first if you haven't done egg freezing that they send you all the vials and you mix everything yourself and put it in a needle and
inject it. I still can't get over that. I was like, wait, what? I have to do this all myself? We'll talk about this when we talk about the changing landscape of fertility, but I was like, wait, there's so many dumbasses like in the world. Like we're all, including myself, we're supposed to do this ourselves. Like how much margin for error is there?
I was really bad at every science class. And then you're mixing it and then there's bubbles. And I was like, don't air bubbles kill you? Like if you put bubbles in.
Right. And it's like.
Because they're like, get the air bubbles out.
That's a $500 spill. You know, like it's so expensive.
Yeah.
And the stakes are so high. I couldn't believe that they just like send you this box. My box. I've said this before, but my box got lost the night before. I was supposed to start in the morning and the pharmacy's like, yeah, we delivered it. And it was not at my apartment in Brooklyn. And I was like freaking out. And at the last minute, a neighbor like way down the street came to the door and was like, I think this is for you. And I was like, I jumped into his arms, like never met him before. And I was like, thank you so much. And he's like, oh my God, what is happening right now?
Yeah, it is high stakes. I once you get comfortable doing the shots, one of my best friends and I did it together. Obviously, the syncing of the schedules was not exact. So she did it 1 month before.
Mm-hmm.
So I called her about the air bubbles because I was like watching the YouTube, like you watch a YouTube video.
Right.
Like, so I called her and I was like, are the bubbles going to kill me? She's like, no, the bubbles are fine. Just like tap it. They'll go to the top.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was all okay. I think they've changed this since. The worst part for me was the trigger shot because it was like the intramuscular.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't like needles. I don't like blood at all.
Yeah.
And so when they gave me the trigger shot at the facility and then they take a black Sharpie and make a mark on the top of your butt,
right,
which you can't really reach yourself.
See. Right.
I was like, there's nobody I can pay to do this. I was like, nobody here wants $200. I was like, I can't do this. And they were like, you can do it. I was like, no, I'm telling you, I can't do it. There's got to be, I was like in New York City, because you know, was in Salt Lake City. I was like, you can hire somebody. No one here works for hire.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, I have to do this. And they were like, no. So I drove to urgent cares and I went in and I was like, can I have you give me this needle? And they were like, no. And I was like, do you work for cash? Like, could I come back at 6 in the parking lot and you can give me the needle? And they were like, no, you need to leave. And I'm like, okay.
Oh my God. Seriously?
Oh yeah. No, I was like, I can't do this. And you have to give it at the set time
right.
for the retrieval. So I was having a complete and utter meltdown because I was like, there's no, I can't do it. Everyone's like, yeah, you can. I'm like, no, I cannot give myself this shot in my back. No. So I called the woman I had stayed in her Airbnb when I first came to Utah, who I remembered was a nurse practitioner, and left her the most multiple frantic voicemails.
Oh my God.
And I was like, I don't care what it costs. Because obviously at this point, I'm in like 10 grand, right?
So right,
I
have right, to. Right. What's another few hundred bucks?
What's a few hundred dollars? I was like, I need this shot. I'll drive to wherever you are. I don't know if you remember me. I stayed in your Airbnb. I remember you being a nurse practitioner. She called me back at like 5:30. I was having a complete meltdown and was like, I'm going to be home in 15 minutes. Come to my house. You do not need to pay me. I will give you the shot.
Oh, my God.
A complete angel.
Yes.
So I drove to her house. I was like such a wreck because I couldn't find anybody all day to give me this shot. Right? I was like, calling people, driving around. And I was new to Utah, so I didn't really know a ton of people. My roommates refused. They're like, oh, we'll do it. They saw the shot and they're like, no, we will not.
Your roommates wouldn't do it?
Nobody would do it. So this former Airbnb host of mine, who was a nurse practitioner, gave me the shot. And then I think I looked so frazzled that she's like, why don't you stay for dinner? Let me feed you.
Oh, my like, God. Please tell me you're still keeping in touch with her.
Yeah. I actually ended up buying in her, like in her neighborhood. So.
Oh my God. Great story.
But she was an angel. So that was like, for me, that was the worst part of the egg freezing. I've heard that they've changed that. So it's not as big of a shot for the trigger.
Uh-huh.
I was unaware until I picked it up at the facility and they drew that bullseye. And then the egg freezing itself was fine. They give you drugs. You don't. I like, obviously now everyone knows that story with the shot. I'm not good with pain or needles, and the retrieval was fine.
Mm-hmm.
And then the only thing that really stunk after, and it didn't happen to anyone else I knew, is I got OHSS, where you get pretty sick after.
Yeah.
So that I don't recommend.
Yes.
Getting that.
Okay. And then at the end of the day, tell us about how many eggs and how many froze and. I know then you met your husband, right, after that.
Yeah. Not terribly long after that, ironically,
mm-hmm.
which I feel like that's how the universe works, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you decide like, okay, I'm not going to meet anybody. I'm going to do this all by myself. And then you meet somebody.
Okay.
I ended up retrieving 18 eggs, but only 11 froze.
Okay.
So that was a little surprising. I didn't realize that. And, everyone's situation is obviously so different, but they can retrieve a lot and not all of them would be frozen. Like, not all of them will make it to be eligible to be frozen.
Right.
So I ended up with 11. They have recommended another round. I will say the OHS was like really very miserable because there's nothing they can do to fix it. And so that was a little scary because it was like, you just have to, the advice I had was drink Gatorade. And then if you feel like you have a blood clot, go to the ER.
Oh my God. You're like, uh-huh. cool.
And I was like,
that's catchy.
Right. Okay, cool. Wonderful. So I just learned how to mix needles and shoot those into myself. Right. I don't really know the first thing about how to know if I have a blood clot. And they're right. like, you'll be hot to the touch. I was like, it's Salt Lake City in like June. It's like 95 degrees out. I'm hot to the touch. God. Isn't everybody? We're in a desert.
I would have been stressing so hard and thinking, do I have a blood? Is that a blood clot? What does it feel like?
I definitely drove myself a few times to the ER and just sat in the parking lot. And I was like in the air conditioning in my car and was like, well, maybe I don't have one.
Mm-hmm. That's
because I did go to urgent care at one point and I was like, do I have a blood clot? And they're like, no, you can't come here. You have to go to the ER.
Oh, God.
I was like, I don't really want to go to the ER. They don't do blood clots at urgent care.
Striking out left and right for you.
I know. I'm surprised I'm not banned from the urgent
parking lot. They're saying no.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Okay. So let's fast forward to once you and your husband got together. I'm sure you talked about family building and all that. Did you, you know, how soon after you guys got together did you mention that you had eggs frozen? What was his reaction to that?
So my husband is very easygoing and he, obviously this is why it worked out because every other time I was dating a guy when I was doing the egg freezing and he was like completely like taken aback by it. I was like, this has nothing to do with you except I can't meet you for dinner in the middle. Like I have to have a shot. Like, so we can either have dinner before or dinner after, or I have to bring my shot with me. Mm-hmm. And that was like very irritating.
Yeah. Annoyed by that. That's not your person. You made the right.
No, definitely not. Yeah. Not my person. So my husband and I talked about pretty early on with dating. Like I wanted to know like what he was looking for. And he was like, I'm looking for marriage. I want to have a family. So we talked about it before we were even married that I had already frozen my eggs. So he knew before we married. And then we got married and I wanted to be married and try naturally against the advice of doctors.
Okay.
But for some reason, after having gone through the OHSS, I didn't totally take the time to know what the process was to use the eggs. And I was very concerned with having to do all the hormones again. And I didn't want to get sick again.
Right.
So I had just said to my husband, without having actually looked into it, mm-hmm. I said, you know, I didn't really do very well with the hormones, which is why I never did a second round, despite them recommending it. I said, let's try naturally for a little bit and then see what happens, which we didn't get pregnant, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So my husband's like, I really think we should try to use your eggs.
Okay.
So he was the one who kind of pushed it to happen a little sooner.
And so for some people listening who might not know the process, what is the process? Obviously, you have to unfreeze the eggs and make embryos with his sperm.
But the hormone treatment is different. And so I really didn't put a lot of effort. I put a lot of effort into initially the egg freezing. And then when it came to the IVF, because I had wanted to try naturally, I wasn't putting a lot of effort into it until we started. So much so that I had a girlfriend send me her extra drugs, not knowing the drugs for the egg freezing portion are completely different than the drugs for the IVF.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the same at all. It's like two very different stages.
Right.
And so the hard part with all the hormones is just the egg freezing. The secondary part is a lot less, in my opinion, and it was a lot less on my body than what I went through with egg freezing.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially, they test both of you. My husband ended up having a problem. So he had to have surgery, which delayed everything about 6 months.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So we did that first because it was going to improve the embryo process.
Mm-hmm.
But it also explained why we weren't getting pregnant naturally.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So I always tell all my girlfriends, and I wish no one had ever said this to me, my husband is like a super athlete in great shape. I would have never thought he would have a problem. And so I always tell anyone who ever asked me about the process, I would always get your partner tested at the same time as you.
Yeah.
Because you don't know who it is.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Just as a baseline, because it could be either person. There's just always, I feel like, has always been so much emphasis on the female's fertility.
Right.
It's starting to change, but.
Yes.
So he had surgery and then we did embryos. And that is, you know, we're not really involved with that, right? They just unfreeze them, make the embryo. So once again, like nothing for me to do. And then you can choose between doing a medicated and unmedicated cycle.
Mm-hmm.
For timing purposes for my job, I chose medicated because we could schedule it.
Okay.
And we did that for timing purposes. So I did the medicated option. So they put you on birth control. I think I was on birth control for 2 months or 1 month. And then with the medicated, I took estrogen. We did the transfer and then I started on progesterone oil shots.
Mm-hmm.
I would give those 0 stars out of 10.
Yes, exactly. What didn't you like about that?
Once again, those are huge needles.
Yeah.
I was like, these needles are still around. Have we not gotten rid of these in 7 years?
It does look very like antiquated or like, you're like, where's the guillotine? Like, do they still make me? It's like a huge needle. Yeah.
It's a huge needle.
Thick oil. Yeah.
Right. I was like, is there a smaller gauge? Like, is there? And they were like, no, this is your only option. You could buy suppositories.
Right.
Which, to give you the price difference, was $15 for all of the oil for the entire 9 weeks.
Okay.
Or $3,000 for 2 weeks of suppositories.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the oil.
Yeah. And you still had to do the shots. Mm-hmm. It wasn't exclusive suppositories. It was just a combo.
Yeah.
So we went with the shots.
Okay.
This was the best, was when they ship you the shots and there is mixing involved, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And my husband was like, what do you mean I have to mix it? I was like, yeah, welcome to my world. He was like, they just ship it to you and we mix it?
I know.
And then I give you the needle? I was like, uh-huh.
Yeah.
And he's like, for 9 weeks? I was like, mm-hmm.
I know. It is crazy. It's so crazy.
Yeah. And it worked.
Wow.
Which was crazy. I wasn't, to be honest, I really wasn't, with everything I've heard from friends going through fertility, our expectation was it wasn't going to work the first time. Because
yeah.
They often say that the first time they do it, it is, I hate to use the word, but like it's informational, right? They learn what worked, like maybe something went well, something didn't go well, and they use it to gather data. That's kind of what I had heard. Mm-hmm. So that your first transfer isn't always successful.
Mm-hmm.
I think because I went in with that attitude, we just continued on with our regularly scheduled life. So we did the transfer. I ate French fries because I know that's recommended.
Mm-hmm.
We had French fries. I went for acupuncture before and the day of the transfer. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I did acupuncture in advance. They recommended so many sessions. And then I went right after the transfer. I did my acupuncture, got French fries. And then we went back to our regular normal lives.
It's programming. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, regular programming. Because I just figured it's either going to work or it's not going to work. And I'm just going to not think about it. And then we'll see if it, because my sister's had a miscarriage, you know, you just hear all the stories, especially I'm 41. So I've just heard so many horrible stories.
Finding a hoodie that lasts through the season can be tough. The American Giant Classic Full Zip Hoodie is made to last year after year. Snag the hoodie that brings comfort for life. Save 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20 at checkout.
And so many people have such long journeys. So I just figured it's not going to work. So we'll...
Right.
Wait and see what happens and not get too excited.
Yes.
So we left, we went on vacation. I never went back to the clinic for blood work or anything. I was like, we'll be in touch, get that stuff done later. We have a vacation planned.
Right. I mean, did you go in for beta after 2 weeks or 10 days or however long? No.
No, we left on vacation. No, I was like, well, we couldn't get the blood test on vacation. Okay. So I just didn't do it.
Oh, wow.
I was okay. Like, we had everything already booked for a vacation, and the way the timing worked out, we rebooked it the vacation, but I couldn't push it back any farther and I really wanted to do it.
Yeah.
So we just...
Were you stand-up paddling? You
know, no, but I was hiking a ton. I was hiking. We were hiking in the Dolomites.
Wow.
Yeah. So I just brought a pregnancy test with me. We took it. It said I was pregnant. So I didn't drink. I, mm-hmm. Acted like I was pregnant. And then we came back and we scheduled blood work and we did an ultrasound when we got back and it said, you're pregnant.
Wow.
And then we didn't announce it for a long time because I was so nervous about it.
So the eggs were frozen for what, like 7 years? Is that?
Yeah. Like a long time.
Yeah. No, that's it's so cool to hear that. And I have to say, I also did IVF for my son, which we'll talk about, but my first round also was successful. So I'm in that
That's amazing.
Small percentage where it's very, we're very, very lucky. And we know that, it's unfortunately, that's not always the case, as you were saying. And, I can relate to that because I was like, wait, what? That worked? But we were only going to do one round because I had secondary infertility. So, okay, let's go back to you and then we can talk a little bit more about my stuff. So you are right now, tell us.
I am very pregnant right now.
That's so exciting.
Which is very exciting. Yeah, so we waited to week 20 to tell anybody. I wanted to go through the anatomy scan and make sure everything was okay. So I waited quite a while. We told some like close family members earlier, but really wanted to wait before I told anybody. Yeah. And so we are due in like 3.5 weeks.
Mm-hmm. And do you mind saying how old you and your husband are or how young?
We are old. I will be 40. I will literally be 41 and a half when I have her.
Yeah.
And then my husband's 43.
Yeah. I was 40 when I had my son.
Okay.
I don't feel like that's old, but are they calling it a geriatric pregnancy for you? Or has anyone used that term? And have you shot them? Have you shot them a lot?
Advanced maternal age.
Yes. It's so humiliating. So, I'm like, can we come up with another term for that, please?
I know. Yeah. I will say the benefit is you get a lot of extra doctor's appointments, which I really like being nervous, which is good. And they're very understanding if you're nervous. So I've liked that aspect of it because I feel like if you're young, they're like, oh, you don't need, I think you get so many fewer scans.
Mm-hmm. Just the security of it, right? Like peace of mind, I guess you could say.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's when really I've had that, yes. I've liked that part of it. But yeah, I would say like we're older, you know, like in my head, when I thought about this in my 20s, I was like, I'll definitely be married and have a family like starting at 30. It was always in my head at 30. Mm-hmm. And so it's very ironic that that didn't happen until almost 40. Like mm-hmm. my husband and I have been married 3 years. So it was like almost 39 when I got married.
Yeah. Well, I'm so happy for you guys. And 41 is not old in the scheme of life, but I know what you mean. You know, it's not how you thought your life was going to play out, but mm-hmm. you look very young. I'm sure you're super young at heart and, you know, this is awesome. I'm so excited for you guys.
Thank you. Yes. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about how you got into the fertility space. And I just absolutely love your podcast. I think it's just so nice to have a resource out there because with my journey, I started it so long ago with freezing the eggs. It just wasn't that talked about back then.
Correct.
About what fertility looked like, what fertility cost, what happens if it isn't easy. And also, I felt like it was so focused on the female gender.
100%. So I am a journalist and I, same as you, like was very career focused. My husband and I had moved from Chicago to New York when we turned 30. All my friends in Chicago were starting to have their families and have babies then, but we were like new to a city that we didn't know anybody in. And we're like, we don't need to start yet. Let's have fun and meet new people. We didn't even know how to use the subway. So we were like, we can't have babies yet. So we pushed it off. Point being, I think if we would have stayed in Chicago, I probably, you know, would have started to try when I was younger. But like we were talking about at the top of the show, I didn't know much about my fertility. I really didn't know that it was going to be significantly harder as you got older. I figured, you know, a little bit. But, you know, there's a vast difference between doing it at 28 and doing it at 35 or beyond, you know? So,
yeah, a huge difference.
I'd, you know, seen celebrities in magazines. I'm like, oh, Halle Berry just had a baby at 43 or whatever. So I was like, I can do this whenever. So we pushed it off. We had our daughter when I was I got pregnant when I was 34. So she was not an assisted reproductive technology baby. I don't like to use the word natural because I feel like it makes it seem like if you don't, or if you do have the baby with science, that it's like unnatural in some way. So
right.
He was not a medically assisted pregnancy.
Baby.
Yeah, exactly. She was a free baby, as we call it sometimes in fertility rally.
Oh, that's a great way to describe it.
So we had her and then we waited a couple years to try again. We wanted to have a second kid. And then I found myself having recurrent pregnancy loss. So I had 4 miscarriages and, you know, I was in my late 30s at this point and I was really depressed because I loved my daughter so much and I loved being a mom so much. I didn't even know that I was experiencing what is called secondary infertility. I had never heard that term before. And in fact, I never heard it until after I had my son. So like, this is how little this was talked about. And back to your question about it being kind of taboo and, you know, people not being forthcoming about fertility and stuff. I went to a bookstore after I'd had my 3rd miscarriage and was looking for books about miscarriage. I was like, I need to like find some stories. I need some people. Instagram wasn't a thing at the time. You know, there weren't a lot of podcasts at the time. Facebook groups were like really weird and kind of few and far between. So I just like, my way of dealing with stuff is connecting with people and, you know, like sharing stories and all that. So I couldn't find anything. I went to the bookstore. There was one book about miscarriage and it was called Every Drunken Cheerleader, Why Not Me? It was like just some like self-published memoir, which it made me laugh. I was like, it's kind of a brilliant title, but it wasn't, you know, what I was exactly looking for. So I was like, I can't believe nobody is talking about this. Like, this is crazy. And I felt so isolated and so alone. I, you know, basically began to experience depression. My husband's, you know, our relationship was really hard because, as you know, if you're trying to have a baby and you can't, the sex is the least sexy sex you'll ever have. And there's a lot of timing and a lot of pressure and a lot of...
It's the worst sex you could have, I think. When you're like, here's the schedule.
Yeah. I'm ovulating. Stick it in. Like, it's so gross. Like, in retrospect, like the way that I was behaving and the pressure I was putting on him. And anyway, so we were just like down in the dumps, basically relationship wise. And finally, you know, I got to the point where I was like, I can't stop thinking about the second kid. I just don't feel like I'm done yet. And we weren't on the same page about that. Cause after the fourth miscarriage, he was like, I think we're good with Ever, our daughter. And I was like, I don't think we're done yet. I just can't. And I remember thinking, I'm so sorry. I wish I didn't want this so badly, but I can't ignore it. Cause I felt like I was really causing a lot of problems in our marriage, and it was causing a lot of stress. And it was like, it would have been so much easier if I was just like, yep, we're good, we're done. But I just didn't feel that way. And I do want to say to people who might not have heard my story before, you know, secondary infertility is interesting, right? Because you have some people being like, well, at least you already have a kid. You know, what are you putting yourself through this for? And I always try to explain it coming from a place or like they guilt you into like, you're not satisfied. Like, aren't you satisfied with one? And I try to spin it. I'm not even spin it, but I try to reframe it because this is how I truly feel. It's not about not being satisfied. It was like, I love being a mom so much that I wanted to do it again. Like, I didn't want to be done with that newborn and baby phase, and I wanted another kid. So it was like coming from a place of love, not a place of greed. You know what I mean? And I feel like sometimes people misunderstand secondary infertility and don't think it's as hard or, you know, I always say it's not the pain Olympics. Like, if you're going through any sort of infertility, it's hard and it's painful. So whether it's primary or secondary, or you're trying for a third or fourth kid, you know, it's just sucks across the board. So I just want to say that to anybody who might be experiencing secondary infertility and not feeling validated, like their pain isn't warranted. Or, you know, I think as women, we do ourselves a disservice sometimes being like, well, I wasn't that far along, or, you know, I already have a kid. You know, we even do it to ourselves. And I just want, I feel like we should stop doing that and acknowledge that, like, the shit is hard and it's okay to feel terrible about it. And, you know, I just want to like support anybody who might not be feeling supported, that whatever they're going through, if it's not, you know, quote unquote, what people think is hard, you know what I mean?
That's the hard part about fertility. I feel like you get a lot of unwarranted feedback.
Yes.
That people are trying to maybe say, and some, you know, I think some people are well-intentioned and they want to say something nice. And it's just until you walk in or on that path, whether it's primary or secondary, you just don't know how sensitive it is to be in that position.
Absolutely. And I think it's just better to, instead of judging people, just be there for them. And even if you don't understand what they're going through, to say, you know, because people ask me all the time, what do you say in this scenario? What do you say in this scenario? And sometimes I feel like it's okay to even be like, I don't know what to say, but I love you and I'm here for you. You know, you don't have to have the perfect thing to say, but it's oftentimes better to admit that than saying nothing at all.
Yeah. Or saying something that comes off insensitive when that's not the intention.
Or too judgy. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Or judgy. Yeah. Cause that's the last thing you need.
Exactly. So back to the story really quickly. So we finally, my husband and I agreed, you know, we didn't have any IVF coverage. This was all out of pocket. And, you know, we don't have a shit ton of money. So we were like, this is very expensive. And we can talk more about the financials of it, obviously. But we agreed to do one round of IVF because I went and saw a specialist who ended up being my doctor, Dr. Klein, at Extend. And he was amazing. And he basically said, you're the perfect candidate for IVF. You've got a really healthy egg supply or an egg quantity. We just have to find the quality ones. And the reason you're having miscarriages is because your egg quality. So it's an egg quality issue leading to this recurrent pregnancy loss. So like I said before, you know, we did do the one round of IVF and I'm so, so, so lucky that it worked. And I had my son in 2015. So, you know, it
was amazing.
And after that, the reason that I started the podcast and also Fertility Rally, which is the community that I co-host, and then I have these children's books about IVF and, you know, kids being born through ART, that it's all under the same umbrella and MO of just normalizing the conversation and, you know, continuing to break the taboos and continuing to share stories and help each other out and share information. And, you know, I'm such a fan of other women. Like, I love women and I'm so happy to be a woman. And I feel like creating a safe space where people can really just get real and raw about, you know, what they're going through, and whether that be in my podcast or in Fertility Rally, or, you know, the books are also kind of, you know, it's not easy stuff to talk about, but I feel like I've made it palatable for families and kids. You know, I think it's just important to get that stuff out there, because the more we talk about it, the more normal it is and the more understood, you know, people are in general who are going through any sort of fertility issue.
Absolutely. Yeah, I love the podcast, because it's so, you know, podcasts are so accessible. You can listen to it, you know, as you're doing laundry or if you're taking a walk.
Yeah.
You know, and I think having more voices out there in the fertility space is so important, just because, as you were saying, like, I would have never frozen my eggs if it hadn't been in part of my community.
Right.
So had I not worked in finance, had I not had other colleagues and friends talking about it, had my doctor not brought it up.
Right.
I didn't ask, you know.
Right.
And so I think having that network support and bringing the conversation to the forefront where it's not taboo and you can talk about it makes everything a lot more accessible and not as intimidating.
Yeah.
It can be very intimidating.
Totally. Absolutely. I mean, yeah, I remember I didn't really know anything about anything until I got into this world, and I'm still learning. You know, I've had almost 400 episodes of the podcast, and I feel like every episode I'm like, oh, I didn't know that. Like, I learned something new, because things are constantly changing, as you know.
I was like, the technology is advancing and things are changing.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's amazing. And then what we talked about a bit on our show, and you mentioned just now, is back in the day, so when I went through this, I own my own business, so definitely no coverage. And it wasn't as common that there was coverage. It's starting to change now, right, where there are benefits through workplaces. Like, my sister's a government employee and they have fertility coverage, which is surprising as a government employee. So you didn't have any coverage, so you had to pay out of pocket. It's so expensive.
It is.
You don't have coverage.
Absolutely. They say on average, what, a cycle's like $20,000 to $30,000, like a cycle of IVF. And people are often doing, you know, multiple. But I do think that, you know, we've made some strides just in general in the workforce. You know, like you said, there are a lot more companies where fertility coverage is mandatory, or, you know, that's one of the perks they give to their employees, which is great. You know, there's certain states and cities now that are, you know, also working really hard to provide more coverage for people across the board. You know, I think the bummer about assisted reproductive technology in general is, you know, it's a privilege, and it's really, it's not accessible to everybody. So, you know, again, I think my lucky stars that we were able to do it. I mean, we had to borrow money from my parents and my husband's parents to do our one round of IVF. And, you know, I have so many rally members and friends who are hundreds and hundreds of $1,000s, you know, into this thing and still haven't gotten there yet, you know? So it's crazy. It's so frustrating and it's crazy.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking to see people go into so much debt.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the tricky part. And that's kind of where I heard, you know, I would hate to spend $20,000 to $30,000 around to get data, right? You know, where they say, okay, now that we did it, it didn't work. Now we have better information. You're like, well, that was a very expensive data tests, you know, to go through. So I am happy to see more companies offering it. But a lot of people, as you said, don't have the coverage. And then it comes down to, how do you structure your finances in order to make it feasible?
Right.
And it just gets super costly. That's been a conversation a lot on the show, which I've always encouraged women who've come on the show. If you're interested in the egg freezing, to do it younger and reallocate your budget to do it as young as possible, if it is something that is a priority for you, or to look for it when you're switching jobs as a employee benefit.
Absolutely. There's also, you know, grants out there. There's a lot of fertility grants. You know, you can do a quick search, and there's some really wonderful ones that, you know, are a lot of them were started by people that have gone through infertility themselves and started this to give back to, you know, the community. There's nonprofits, obviously. So there's lots of stuff that you can kind of research. The good thing is, like, it does seem like I said, a lot of people who have gone through some sort of fertility struggle created a brand or a product or a podcast or a book or a something because they want to make it suck less for everybody else. And, you know,
I think one of the ads on your show was for a doctor, PhD,
Fertile.
And she has an ad. Fertile. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. I thought that was so interesting because when we were going through it, they give you all the options, right? So we went right to IVF for what I thought financially made sense. Like, we're just going to do the IVF. Because we asked for the statistics, you know, they don't know, but they give you statistics. They gave us statistics on all the other options to try, mm-hmm. which some people have to try first for insurance purposes. Yeah. Like, you have to try this two times and this two times, and then you can go to, you can advance to IVF. So we just decided to go straight to IVF because the statistics were the best. So we were paying out of pocket, so we might as well just go full boat is what we thought. But I thought that was a great product, so you could try it at home.
Yeah. So
you didn't have to go through a clinic.
Jen, who created Fertile, she has a PhD and she was going through a fertility struggle of her own. And she actually created a product that is an at-home insemination kit. And it is sterile. It is the first like FDA-approved sterile at-home device. So it's been cool because, full disclosure, I have a brand partnership with her now because she came on my show and talked about it. We loved what each other was doing. So we're helping each other out. So I just want to be transparent that, but I only work with people that I truly believe in. And I think my listeners know that. But anyway, so she's been getting all these Fertile success stories, you know, people who
it's amazing.
Gone through, you know, round after round of IVF or whatever it may be, and then used Fertile and have gotten pregnant. And there's been at least two people in the last like 6 months that have, you know, that I'm aware of, and I'm sure there's more, but it's been cool because, again, she created something new that's kind of groundbreaking and just, again, another option, and it's not a ton of money. So it's just right. Another thing to try.
Yeah, absolutely. That was like the interesting thing about listening. I listened to a few episodes and hearing, because, you know, I didn't really do, besides the egg freezing research, I didn't really do much research until we went to the doctor, met with the doctor.
Yeah.
I was lucky that I had friends that worked at that clinic. At that point, I was friends with one of the doctors, one of the nurses.
Mm-hmm.
So I just trusted, my theme is I trust people in my network. Yeah. I trusted that I would just take their advice. I didn't have to do a lot of research. But listening to your show, you hear about all these other resources that I had no idea that existed.
Totally.
And have changed a lot.
Yeah. And there's new ones, you know, every month. You know, it's funny. I was at an event the other night for one of our fertility doctor friends came out with a book. And we were talking about IVF. And, you know, Elizabeth Carr is the first IVF baby in the U.S. And she and I have, you know, become friends. And she's a big advocate in our community. And, she was at this event. And she and I are actually going to be doing something together later in the year. And she is so awesome. But someone's like, wait, how old are you? And she's 40, two or three? Because IVF is only that old, which is wild. Don't you think, Barbara? Like, in the scheme of medicine and like the ways that it's changed in the last 10 years, think about what's going to happen in the next 10 years. You know, like, think about 20, 30, 40 years from now. Like, it's just, it's so cool that there's so many places that this can go. And I'm sure hopefully it will become better and better and more efficient and cheaper
and more
equitable. You know, like, we want all those things. But IVF is a baby technique. The other thing I know you wanted to touch on and kind of alluded to it earlier was just like guys and fertility. Like, obviously fertility is not just a women's issue. And I do think that that's being talked about a little bit more, but I feel like we barely scratched the surface in general, just in society there, because I feel like the onus is always put on the woman, right? It's like, oh, this is a woman's issue. But I think the statistic is like 40 to 50% of cases have something to do with male factor. Not saying entirely male factor. Sometimes there's, you know, a mix of his and hers, but I think that's the latest stat.
I always say that. And then I also, and I don't, you know, I just believed, you know, he's 50% of it. So my husband took prenatals too.
Yeah.
Right. And did all the stuff I was doing. Right. Because they're part of the equation. But I do feel like it's still not as talked about. It's definitely more of the onus is on the woman. But I tell all of my girlfriends, like, get your husband's or partner's checked, and then make sure they're on, like, they're doing, I don't know if this helped or not, but, you know, we both took prenatals and eliminated phthalates and plastics and all that sort of stuff as well, besides eating healthy and exercising and doing all the things.
Sure. And, you know, men can carry genetic risk too. So it's not as common, but that's also something to look into. You know, if you've got, like, quote unquote, unexplained infertility or whatever, it never hurts, I feel like, to get these kind of baseline tests and just make sure you know as much as you can going into it. And of course, that's easier said than done. I didn't know anything. So I'm like, just trying to spread the knowledge.
Yeah. No, because we got our genetic testing before we even, I think when the embryos were getting made, like before we did anything. And I remember they were like, well, you don't have to do it now. And I was like, why would I wait to see if there's a problem?
Right. Smart.
Because my sister ended up having a problem and everything worked out okay, but they do the genetic testing at a certain stage of pregnancy.
Yeah.
And it takes weeks to get the genetic testing back. You know, it's not a 3-day test at LabCorp. It gets shipped somewhere. And so I was like, well, I have the same genes as my sister, so we're just going to do... So we did everything up front, because that's the great thing about elevating this conversation is I wouldn't have known that had it not happened to my sister.
Right.
And so I had to say, I want the genetic testing done now before we do anything. And they're like, well, we normally wait. And it's like, why? Mm-hmm. To wait to see so that we have a crisis? Is that the reason
right.
we wait? Like if paying out of pocket, right? So
right.
if I want to pay for it now, what does it matter if I do it now or I do it in July?
100%.
You know, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. And I guess the other piece of, like, medical advice, if, you know, for anybody listening that's, like, going through it right now or, you know, thinking about their fertility is, you know, just again, like, asking questions, you know, doing your own research. And, like, above all else, you have to advocate for yourself. You know, nobody knows your own body as good as you. No one knows your family history as well as you do. You know, it's just, it doesn't hurt to, when you go to your next doctor's appointment, come armed with some questions, you know, and when you go in to see a specialist, if you do go in with a list of questions, you know, there's a lot of information out there now. So it's just a matter of, like, pulling it all together for you. And doctors are so busy, and there aren't a lot of reproductive endocrinologists because it's so hard to become one. So, you know, they're strapped. They have a lot of patients. So I think if you go in with, you know, a list of, like, pointed questions and things, you can really maximize that time with them too.
Okay, everybody, thank you so much for listening, and thank you to Barbara, and congrats on the babe. Don't forget, guys, right now you can get all three existing work of art books as a bundle for just $49. That's $30 off the original price. And again, these books have been trusted by thousands of families and clinics and mental health professionals, and they've helped so many people start conversations. So grab that 3-book bundle now at infralifegroup.com. Always reach out to me if you need anything. I'm on Instagram at infertilelifestories. And stay tuned, because book number 4 in the Work of Art series is coming soon. So check them out at infertilelifegroup.com. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks again to Barbara. And I will talk to you guys next time.